And I learned the difference between what is food and what is food-like substances. You know, we don't have bakers anymore. We have food engineers. And as a result, we have an epidemic of obesity and diabetes and cancer, which in my opinion can be directly related to how our food supply has changed.
You're listening to the Uber Dad Podcast
with your host, Rick Brown.
Welcome to Uber Dad. This is episode number 3. Uber Dad is a show for parents of teens. I try to bring you interesting and informative content, and hopefully in an entertaining way. But the goal here is to have some fun with it and work together so that we can have the best possible relationship with our kids. After all, one day they're going to be driving us around and probably changing our diapers. Whenever I tell people the name of the show, they start waving their arms wildly and pointing at themselves, and they're trying to indicate to me that they are Uber Dad. And they are. All of us are. Moms and dads alike. I think we all kind of identify with the concept of transforming from parents of these sweet little kids to eventually just becoming their driver. And Uber Dad is that virtual cab company that we all work for. So it's kind of a club, and welcome to it. Now, this episode is about something near and dear to my heart, food. If you are what you eat, then I am pie. My older son would be chicken fingers and fries, and my wife is Nutella. None of those situations is good. So, we have food addiction recovery expert Sandra Aaliyah with us. Sandra will help us understand why we eat the way we do and how to change our habits so that we can all become healthier. She has an incredible story, and I know it's going to affect you. Most of the teens I know have terrible eating habits. I mean, they still eat like little kids. They order plain cheese pizza, and they don't eat the crust, and they order chicken fingers and fries, and then they kind of live off this. When I talk to other parents about this, they say their kids do the same things. For some of them, they can enjoy this time where their metabolism allows them to eat junk food and stay slim. Others struggle with their weight. The thing is, the food that they're eating is going to catch up with them sooner or later, especially when they get to be around 16 or so, because that's when a lot of them stop playing sports. So stay tuned for that interview. It's coming up right after Uber Dad Update. Uber Dad Update is brought to you by buildaguitar.ca. The only thing better than owning a beautiful guitar is being able to say that you made it yourself. And now, it's time for the Uber Dad Update. In New York State, a judge has backed a couple's case to kick their son out of the house. 30-year-old Michael Rotondo has never contributed towards household expenses, he doesn't have a job, and he says he's not ready to support himself. His parents have offered to give him some money and help him look for work, but Michael doesn't want any part of that, and he's appealing the ruling. This should serve as a wake-up call to all parents. We need to help our kids get on the path to being able to support themselves and set them up to have a good life. Otherwise, we can just walk around the house and say, see you in court. A real-life Spider-Man climbed a building in Paris to rescue a child dangling from a fourth-floor balcony. 22-year-old Mamudo Gassama scaled the outside of the building in 30 seconds flat to pull the child to safety. If you watch the video, you'll see another man on an adjacent balcony holding onto the child's arm. Kind of makes you wonder why he couldn't have just lifted the child up. It didn't seem that heavy. But hey, the child is safe and in the market for some new parents. His father wasn't even at home at the time because he was delayed playing Pokemon Go. The mother wasn't even in Paris at the time, but you know what? Hopefully they get home in time to receive their Parent of the Year awards. Pretty sure they're in the mail. Another dangerous teenage craze is upon us, the deodorant challenge. This is where teens spray deodorant onto each other's skin for as long as possible until they can't take it anymore. It can cause severe burns. I think it's a good thing that all the major things have been invented already. You know, things like the wheel, fire, air travel, computers. If it were left up to this generation, we'd have a bunch of morons running around with second-degree burns on their skin, eating Tide Pods and playing Fortnite in the dark, all while trying to avoid being served with court papers as their parents try to kick them out of the house. An LA-based band collaborated with Kellogg's to release their song Hello on a record made out of chocolate frosted flakes. You can play the album, and then you can eat it. It's everybody's dream come true. It's quite a spectacular thing, really. It's a brown disc with playable grooves, and there's a silhouette of Tony the Tiger cut out in the middle. The only downside is that nobody under the age of 50 has a record player. The one thing nobody is saying about this? It's great! Speaking of breakfast cereal, major manufacturers including General Mills, Post, and Kellogg's have been experiencing a decline in sales over the past 5 years. In an effort to re-energize sales, the companies are moving away from the healthier options and going for a full-on sugar blitz. I guess the Drake-shaped muesli didn't catch on. Keep on the lookout for a combination of Lucky Charms and Frosted Flakes, chocolate peanut butter Cheerios, and an all-marshmallow unicorn-shaped cereal. Mmm. Dentists may want to staff up over the next few years. This has been Rick Brown reporting for UberDad Update, and unlike anything coming out of Washington, this stuff's all true. UberDad Update is brought to you by buildaguitar.ca. Build-A-Guitar is hands-on instruction with master guitar builder Garen DeKessian of Lucene Guitars in Oakville, Ontario. Garen has built guitars for artists such as Alex Lifeson, Zach Wilde, Phil X, and many, many more. Garen guides you step-by-step through the entire guitar building process, and at the end of the course, you get to keep your creation. For more details and to register, visit www.buildaguitar.ca. And now it's time for our feature interview. Sandra Aaliyah is the world's first certified food addiction counselor. She lost over 100 pounds 13 years ago and has managed to keep it off. She is a pioneer in the field of recovery from compulsive overeating, addictive eating, and obesity management. She's the vice chair of the Toronto chapter of the Canadian Obesity Network, and she's a certified professional coach. Sandra runs Ontario's only 8-week outpatient food addiction recovery program and has created Canada's first 28-day residential treatment program. She also runs retreats where people can reclaim their health. Food addiction is something that plagues teens and parents alike, and I think we all need to understand this better. So welcome to the show, Sandra.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here.
You have an incredible story. It's one of two completely different lives. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. So I have to take you back to when I was 29 years old. And just such a young age, thinking that life was just not something that I could master. And the way that I was eating and the way that it showed up on my body and living with morbid obesity and the number that it just did to my whole life. You know, I wish I could tell you that my only problem was that I weighed over 100 pounds more than I do today, but it wasn't. It really touched every area of my life. I was clinically depressed at the time. And I remember the doctors just trying different cocktails of antidepressants and mood stabilizers. And I was off work for 3 months and I couldn't get the right, you know, combination that I thought I needed. I was looking for that magic pill that of course doesn't exist. I've later found out that eating as much ultra processed foods as I was eating as much fast food as I was eating will make anybody depressed. You know, I was in a bad marriage at the time, but he had his bad behaviors and I had my bad behaviors. You know, I could binge and I could eat and I could use food to anesthetize that pain of being in the wrong marriage. And it was just easier to eat than to kind of clean that up or figure out what I was going to do. And I was taking care of my mom, who was bipolar, suffering from bipolar disorder and from food addiction and morbid obesity herself. And she passed away when she was only 69. So people who, you know, think this disease doesn't kill, it definitely does. And unfortunately, it's usually a very slow, drawn out death. So I definitely had, you know, that kind of eating behavior, that food addiction growing up and modeled to me. And I rebuilt my life. You know, I'm grateful in a way that I hit rock bottom at 29. And I was able to rebuild my life. And I can remember the specific day that I decided I was going to love and accept myself exactly as I was in that moment with no conditions. So that meant whether I lost another pound or not, did not matter, but I couldn't hate myself anymore because all that self-hatred, that self-judgment was robbing me of any energy that I needed to make any sort of changes. So I was just like, screw it. This is who I am. I'm going to love me. I'm going to try and pour as much love as I can on myself and go on. And from there, you know, having set up an internal environment that was kind, loving, and gentle. And from there, the answers came to me. Things and people and therapists came to me because I was ready. And I learned the difference between what is food and what is food-like substances. You know, we don't have bakers anymore. We have food engineers. And the food supply today is very, very different than it was even 100 years ago. And as a result, we have an epidemic of obesity and diabetes and cancer, which, in my opinion, can be directly related to how our food supply has changed. And understanding that the food industry is a highly competitive industry, trying to get the greatest share of your wallet. And how do they do that? They make foods that overwhelm our reward center and are highly, highly addictive. So I learned to go back to eating food for its rightful purpose, which is to nourish my body, to have nutrients, not to feel feelings. Because I never ate for nourishment. Never. I was never interested in that. I was interested in how can I numb out? How can I obliterate any kind of bad feelings I'm having? How can I not feel lonely or sad? That's what food was for.
Yeah, exactly. I worry about kids getting those proper nutrients. I find that kids these days have very limited palates, even into their teens. They're choosing chicken fingers and fries. How do we help them develop better eating habits?
Yeah, and it's tough. And I have a 7-year-old and her palate is very limited as well. But what ends up happening is when the go-tos are the chicken fingers, the fries, the pizzas, over time, our taste buds do start to change. And then when we try to eat broccoli or chicken or salad, it's too much and it tastes awful, right? And
my older son has never had a vegetable.
Wow. Yeah. That's tough. And it's tough too at that age now because you've lost complete control, right? So it's no longer for you to correct, unfortunately. It's for him to find his way. And often I talk to parents who struggle with this, and the only thing that we can do as parents is be an example. So even at 7 years old, my daughter rarely listens to a thing I say, rarely, but she's studying me and she's watching me, and she is ultimately going to do what I do. And that's what my parents did for me in a very unhealthy way. My parents modeled for me what a marriage looked like, how do you manage money, how you eat in very unhealthy ways. They never sat me down and said, oh, Sandra, you know what? When you get married, you should really have a terrible marriage with poor communication. They never communicated that. But that's what they modeled for me and what I observed. And then I had to spend 10 years in therapy undoing everything that I learned from them. And I don't want that for my daughter. So what we can do for our children is model the exact life that we want them to live. And sometimes that can look like I'm living a selfish life, because that means I try to get to the gym 3 to 5 times a week. That means my daughter has to be with a sitter sometimes, right? But I want to model to her, I live in a great neighborhood where actually I can bring her to a lot of my different classes, and she hates it. And says it's boring and awful to watch me do a kickboxing class, but I know I'm teaching her something. I'm teaching her something. I know that when we can't get out and I throw something, a video on YouTube up and I'm doing exercise in front of her, she'll join me for a second and two, and then she'll say, this is really hard. I'm going to go sit on the couch. And I'm like, that's okay. And that's what I have to do. And often her and I have completely different meals, because my daughter is 7 and she's not going to have grilled salmon and kale salad for dinner. It's just not going to happen. So she might be having, her favorite thing happens to be organic chicken. She's developed, it's so interesting about the palate. So my daughter only eats organic chicken. So when she goes to her dad's, he'll call me and say, you said she eats chicken. I'm like, is it organic? And she won't. She can actually taste the difference, which is fantastic.
Really?
Yeah, she can. So she sees me eating all these multicolored vegetables and fish and all this stuff that she's never going to touch. But I know that I'm modeling it for her. And so that's what we kind of have to do with our teens. And similarly, you know, when I talk to parents and they're like, I just want my kids to do physical activity. I go, well, then guess what? You have to do the physical activity. If you want them to go for a walk after dinner, you don't sit on the couch and say, you should go for a walk, or you should take up cycling, or you should do a sport. You actually have to take them by the hand and you go cycling with them, or you take a martial arts class with them, or whatever it is. You know, with my daughter swimming, I sit on the bench and watch her swim, and then she sits on the bench and watches me swim. You can't ask your children to do anything you're not willing to do.
That makes a lot of sense. The only challenge for me is when they get to be teenagers, I find that they don't want to do anything their parents want to do. I know, therapists recommend engaging with your teenagers. I just find it a bit challenging in reality.
It is. It's sort of finding what, so I even run into this with my own daughter because I want to do engaging, fun things that I think are fun. And then she thinks are actually horrible. So, and her and I could not be more different, and that's okay. But, we live in the beaches in Toronto, and it was such a warm day last week. And I said, you know what, I'm going to go pick her up and I'm going to pack a picnic and we're going to go down to the beach and we're going to have a picnic. So I picked her up. So excited. I'm like, look, and I have ball for us to play with. And blah, blah. And she said, that's a horrible idea. So, it's, and I would imagine it's the same with teens, right? We kind of think up what would be a great bonding experience, what would be wonderful for us to share. And they're like, maybe it's nothing they're interested in. So it's really about getting inside of their heads and understanding what interests them, what lights them up, and doing that. Or it's, we used to always say it's quality time together, not necessarily how much. I wonder if the reverse is true. Maybe it is quantity, that you just spend a lot of time together until you get that glimpse of quality.
Yeah.
Right. So instead of being like, I've got an hour, so let's bond on command, right? Like right now, come on, the clock is ticking. We got to connect.
I don't know if that'll work in our house, but I'll give it a try. Some foods trick us into eating more, don't they? Like, can you tell us about that?
For sure. Especially when you're food addicted, anytime that you have anything with sugar or flour products, so breads, pastas, even potatoes, anything that kind of jacks up your insulin, you're going to run into a couple of problems. When you have too much insulin running through your body, we now know that it will block a hormone called leptin. So leptin is a hormone that tells your brain, hey, you've had enough to eat, stop eating. But we now know that if insulin levels are elevated, leptin will not hit your brain. So that's why, I'm Italian. I can eat a plate of pasta that's little, like a cup of pasta, or I can eat a giant vat of pasta. There is no full switch with pasta. Why? Because my insulin goes soaring through the roof and leptin never hits my brain. And I used to say in early recovery, oh, my full switch is broken. It's just, I don't know what happened to me. It's broken. It wasn't broken. That's what was happening. The other thing with sugar, very similarly to an alcoholic, I hope that we're at a place now where an alcoholic never hears, why can't you just have a glass of wine? Just have one glass, enjoy it, and walk away. What's wrong with you? Come on, let's just try this right now. It's New Year's Eve. I'm going to give you a glass of champagne. You're going to be totally fine. I hope that we don't do that to alcoholics in recovery. We do that to food addicts all the time, because just like the alcoholic, he knows or she knows that as soon as she has that glass of wine, she's off to the races and she's got to have the whole bottle and she's going to be fall down drunk by the end of the night, because there is no stopping her. Once she has it in her system, once she tastes the alcohol, it's game over. And it's similarly with the sugar and the carbs, certain carbs with us as well, that I'm not going to have one cookie. My brain tries to trick me every time and says, no, no, this time it's different, Sandra. You got this. Like, just have the one Oreo, enjoy yourself, you'll be fine. And then I have the Oreo, and then the mind chatter starts, right? The Oreo box is calling me. There's more here. Have more.
Oreos talk.
It talks to you, right? And I cannot stop. Doesn't matter if I'm sick. It doesn't matter. Nothing matters, right? I have to finish that entire box of Oreo. And that's the only way I'm going to get peace that night, is once the box is empty. But as long as there's cookies left, it's going to haunt me and call me and I can't stop. So it's no different than any other addict. So it's better and easier not to have the drug than to negotiate the drug, to negotiate when, where, how much, how little. That life is not peaceful. And I always want for my clients a life of peace and neutrality around food, where they eat breakfast and they can sail comfortably over to lunch. They're not concerned about what's for lunch. Like, my family oftentimes I've been away with my family and there's a lot of overeaters and compulsive eaters in my family, and we're eating breakfast. We're not even done. What's for lunch? What are we going to do for lunch? I mean, it's 8 o'clock and we don't know what we're eating for lunch. I'm like, can I finish my breakfast? And that's, you know, food addiction, right? And a miracle to this day that I'm so grateful for is that I eat my dinner and then I don't eat again till breakfast. That to this day is a miracle, because nighttime eating, nighttime binging was my number one problem.
Yeah. Same here. I've heard people say that you shouldn't eat about 3 hours before you go to bed. I find it difficult to do that consistently, but when I do do that, I definitely feel better.
Yeah. And it's one meal at a time, one moment at a time. You know, I just started one of my 8-week courses this morning, and I always start with the biggest predicator of behavioral change long-term, because that's what we want. We want long-term behavioral change. The number one predicator is self-efficacy. And self-efficacy basically means, do you think it's possible? So if you ask me, are you never again going to have sugar and flour for the rest of your life? My answer is, I don't know. I can't answer that question. I can't answer what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. That's too daunting. It causes me too much anxiety. And it activates that little addict brain in my mind that goes, really, really, Sandra, you're never going to have a piece of cake again. Come on, right? And then I'm flustered and I don't know what to do. So the only way that I can have 100% self-efficacy, 100% that it is possible, is one meal at a time. So I've already had lunch. I'm going to comfortably sail through to dinner. I know, because that's what my experience is every day. And then at dinner, I'm going to ask myself, can I have a meal that does not include sugar and flour just for dinner? I don't even worry about breakfast, just for dinner. Can I do this? And the answer always is, yeah, of course I can. I can manage today. I can manage this meal. And then what I promise you, what happens is you look over your shoulder and you're like, wow, it's been years. It's been thousands of meals where I just ask myself that same simple question.
That's incredible. Can you give us an idea of some of the things that you would realistically eat?
Yeah. So breakfast, I love, love, love eggs. Like I eat a ton of eggs, and my cholesterol is the lowest it's ever been in my entire life. So, you know, just to go off on a tangent, it's very interesting. We can actually almost have a start date to when the obesity epidemic started. And that is when it was deemed that fat is bad and that we should cut fat out of our diets. And then all the food industry put sugar in to replace the fat. And that is exactly when it all started. So fat is not bad. Fat is very good as long as it's healthy fat. So healthy fats, right? Omega-3s, olive oil, avocados. I have a diet that's high in good fats. I would say that's a good portion of where I get my calories. So this morning, I had an omelet. So I had asparagus, olives, and then I grated a beautiful cheese on top. Delicious. And that carried me over to lunch. And lunch, I had a Beretta hamburger. So I only eat meat that's organic, grass-fed, and unprocessed. And Beretta is also gluten-free. It's a great, not that I'm plugging a brand, but Beretta, it seems to be the only. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but bacon, it's impossible to find bacon without sugar in it, because bacon wasn't delicious enough. Insanity, because I do like bacon, and I'll stand at the grocery store and I'm flipping through all, you know, reading all the ingredients. It's nearly impossible to find a bacon that doesn't include sugar. So I had that, and I made a giant coleslaw salad. And then tonight I'm going out for dinner. So I don't know what I'm going to have, but I know, I always say my brain is the best Google search in the world. And so I've been at restaurants where, and it's, let's say it's an Italian restaurant, even a pizzeria, let's say, right? And I'm like, oh crap, what am I going to do? Because I don't have flour and sugar. So I asked this Google search, what is the best thing that I can have on this menu for me? And all of a sudden things pop up that I didn't see before. Like, oh, you can get like vegetables as sides. I'm like, cool. Maybe I'll get the rapini and I'll get the sauteed mushrooms. And then I noticed that there's like grilled chicken on that entree. And I'll say, can I get the grilled chicken from that and the prosciutto from this? And I make a plate that's totally fine. And then the person beside me, honest to God, will be like, there's nothing here for me to eat. I can't do it. So I'm having pizza. And I'm like, but I looked at the same menu and I picked out 4 things that I'm eating. And they're like, no, there's nothing here for me.
I thought for sure you were going to say that they ordered the same thing as you.
No, because they had already made up their mind. There was nothing there. And remember, like, think about Google. Google's the best. If I typed in Google, does coffee kill you? Yes, coffee kills you. Google, is coffee the best thing you could ever drink? Yes, that's the best thing you could ever drink. You're always going to get, you ask an intelligent question, you get an intelligent answer. So I always ask this Google search, what is the best thing that I can have on this menu?
Smart. Mm-hmm. When you started changing your eating habits, did you have to go back and study cooking?
So I'm a terrible cook and my family hates eating at my house because they say that it doesn't taste good, but I like it. Maybe why my daughter doesn't eat what I eat.
Well, the omelet sounded good.
The omelet was good. So I keep things pretty simple. I have a George Foreman grill. I probably use it for 90% of all my meals. So I throw salmon on there. I throw steak on there. I throw chicken on there. And then my vegetables, like I generally steam stir fry or salad. So I keep things, my meals, because I'm so intensely busy, have to be prepared in 30 minutes or less. That's my rule. I've even just created a new dish. It's my version of pasta because I love pasta. And at the grocery stores now, you can buy spiralized zucchini noodles. And then I make a rich tomato sauce. I use organic ground beef, a great Parmesan cheese. Honestly, it's so good. Why would you have noodles? Noodles don't even have taste. Pasta, I'm Italian, first generation. Pasta is all about the sauce, the cheese, and the meat. So what do you need that noodle for? That noodle's crazy. And at least with the zucchini noodles, I actually get satiated. With real noodles, I don't. There is not enough real noodles in all of Canada.
How do we go about correcting our appetites?
So appetite correction happens when you start eating real foods. So we are the only species on Earth that have not been able to regulate our weight. So if you think about it, every other species on this earth does not overeat and does not have a weight problem except for humans. And in fact, humans, if you go back, you know, maybe 500 years, also did not have this problem, right? I'm not saying everyone was skin and, thin and thin, but everybody was the right size for themselves genetically or what culturally. It has only been in this last 100 or so years that we have not been able to regulate our weight and also the animals that we keep. So the dogs and cats that we feed have a weight problem, not the ones out in the wild, just the ones that humans feed. So it's a hint, hint. And why is it that we can't regulate our weight and regulate our eating when that's the way we were created to be? That's what nature intended for us. Well, it's our food supply. And it is the way our brains are overwhelmed with the pleasure that these foods that have been manufactured that way cause us to want more and more and more. There's a great book out there, The End of Overeating by David Kessler. And he talks about that these products, these ultra processed products with sugar, fat, salt, they have a way to rewire our brains, making us desire more and more. So that's why we don't get satiated. That's why there isn't enough. You know, that old joke, I eat Chinese food, you know, have Chinese buffet and 45 minutes later, I'm hungry. Yes, that is correct. We can't overdo it with real food, right? Even things like, my clients always say, honey is healthy. Why can't I have honey? Right. And I'm like, yes, honey is healthy, but not for a food addict because you're going to spike your cravings and your hunger. So back in the day, 100 years ago, if you wanted honey, guess what you had to do? You had to go to the beehive and you had to go get the honey. And you only got like a teeny half a teaspoon of honey. And how do you get honey today? You squeeze it out of a teddy bear at will. Right? Like you just like, how much honey do I want? Because this is so good for me. No, it's only good for you in its natural state. And the same with fruits. Right? When, yes, we are designed, our brains are designed to like sugary food because that meant survival for you. So, 500 years ago, you came across a bush with berries. Yeah, you had to eat all those berries because guess what? You're going to walk another 45 miles before you see berries again. And we don't do that. Now there is a fast food joint open on every corner. I always say, processed foods are the most pervasive drug out there. There are no limits on this drug. You can get it 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. It is marketed to children. It is seen as love. Like this is messed up. Not even alcohol is that available, right? At least the LCBO closes at what, 10? And there's no way the LCBO is selling to a teenager ever, right? And here we are marketing cereal with Oreo bits in it to who? To the five-year-old. Like it's really, really, I call it brainwashing with food. And it's out of control. And once you start eating whole foods, but it takes a while. See, when you stop with these ultra processed foods, you go through withdrawal. It's a 30-day withdrawal, usually even more. And it's painful and it's unpleasant. And nobody wants to go through the withdrawal. And your addict brain is going to say, you can't live like this. This is too painful. Just go have that Coke, that Diet Coke, and feel better. But if you can get through the withdrawal and you regulate your eating and you start eating whole foods, then you will see what it feels to be satisfied and full. And especially with fat, especially if you struggle with hunger, don't be shy with the fat.
What about portion control diets like the Zone, where they deliver you your breakfast, lunch, and dinner and your snacks? I've tried that a number of times. I like it. The problem for me is when I kind of deviate from what they actually provide me and if I have additional things.
Yeah, it's tough. And I mean, I always worry about portion control. That's a scary word for me. So whenever we do, I don't know the Zone diet well enough to comment on it, but when I know for a fact that whenever we go on a restrictive diet, when we try to restrict our calories too much, your brain believes you're in a famine. It has no idea that it's a self-imposed famine. And understand that your brain's job is to keep you alive. And famine was a real threat. If you went through famine, that meant your genes were not going to survive. So your brain is wired to survive famine. So here you are on this restrictive diet, or myself, because this happened to me. I was on a super restricted diet. Managed to stay on it for 6 months, lost 50 pounds. Meanwhile, my brain's like, oh my God, this famine's going on for 6 months. Like, this is really serious. And so what it does is it drives up the signals to find food. It drives up the signals to look for food, seek food. It drives out all other priorities. Like, you don't even know this is happening. This is just the way we're made up. And not find just any foods, because your brain is efficient. It wants you to find sugary, calorie-dense foods. Because now it's thinking, it's been 6 months and Sandra's been in a famine. So she's got to get her hands on. And then I live in this world where that kind of food is available at my fingertips and can be delivered to my door. So that was the last diet that I ever went on. I lost 50 pounds in 6 months and then I proceeded to gain 100 back in a year.
Wow.
Yeah. And I had no idea. I mean, the guilt and shame that I carried for that, but I had no idea. It was just my brain's job. Like I had no defense against what was happening in my brain to get that weight back on. And then some, because, you know, we don't know when the famine's going to hit again. She needs a little extra.
Famine hits my house every hour on the hour. Wow. Can you tell us about your food addiction recovery program?
Sure. I have Ontario's first and only 8-week food addiction recovery program. I run clinics out of the Wharton Medical Clinic in 3 locations. So Burlington, St. Catharines, and Toronto. And then I also do an online one, Zoom. Zoom is very similar to Skype. So that's for people who live outside of that area who don't want to travel in horrible traffic and sit in their homes and participate. It's very interactive and it's the exact same program. I just do it over the screen. The 8 weeks is a very holistic program. So the first week, we do deal with the science of food addiction and define it and understand what's happening at the brain level. Because to be honest with you, your greatest obstacle to weight loss and eating well lies between your ears. It really does. It's not about finding the right diet or the right exercise regime. It's really about your thinking and what's going on in your brain. And then I hand out a meal plan, as we spoke. This meal plan is powerful on 2 fronts. It helps to extinguish cravings. Because at the end of the day, when you decide to put down these trigger foods, these foods that act like drugs, what are you left with? Cravings and urges. And I teach a great CBT little formula on how to handle cravings and urges so that you feel confident and calm in the face of them. That's when you have neutrality with food. When you realize that, yeah, I can have a craving and I know what to do and I'm not going to react. And this meal plan helps to stabilize hormones and in particular insulin, which gives you appetite correction. So So once that's done, it does become a holistic program. We talk about what to do when intense emotions bubble up to the surface and you're not going to use food, right? And for some people, this may be the first time in their lives that they're trying to learn how to deal with stress and not eat, how to deal with sadness and not eat, how to deal with anger and not eat. So it can be really a scary new world when you're what you thought was your best coping mechanism is taken away. We also look at codependency. Codependency and addiction and food addiction often go hand in hand. People struggle with healthy boundaries with their families and friends. So we talk about that, navigating relationships now that you're not using food. And then lastly, we spend some time on spirituality and mindfulness, because to eat addictively, we must go mindless. Nobody eats or binges mindfully. It's not possible. We all go mindless. And so the antidote is to become mindful. And as well, if my biggest obstacle is my thinking, and I have some sick thinking when it comes to eating, I can't outthink my thinking with my brain. I can't use the same brain that generates sick thinking, right? That tells me for 10 years, the diet's going to start tomorrow. So I might as well eat today. People have been stuck in that loop for decades. I can't use that same brain to come up with, you know, better thinking. So that's why I go inward to my higher self, to that place of inside of me that's at peace, that longs for nothing, where compulsion doesn't live. Tap into that place, use that place for food selection. And ultimately, the goal of the program is to find peace and neutrality with food.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so we have a Zoom course that is available to everybody coming up in the coming week. So, you know, people can email me or go onto my website. So my website's sandraalia.com. Sandra is S-A-N-D-R-A. Alia is E-L-I-A.com. And you can find out about my programs and email me and get more information.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Sandra. I mean, this stuff just makes so much sense when I hear you say it, and I know it's going to stay with me. I hope it stays with our listeners, and I hope it helps them eat smarter.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. And good luck with your son. I know it's tough. And you know what? You know, even though this is my career, my passion, I struggle with my own daughter. So I get it. I get it. And they're just so hardwired for junk. So hardwired for it.
Here's a quick recap of some of Sandra's great insights. It's not your fault that you're overeating, but there is something that you can do about it. Take it one meal at a time. Ask yourself, do I need all this sugar? Look for healthy options that won't block your brain's full switch. Try to put together a healthy meal each time. Have chicken, fish, or meat with vegetables. Don't negotiate with yourself to just have that one last cookie, because you're going to eat the whole box. Avoid late-night binge eating. Eat healthy fats and whole foods. Be a great example for your kids. Eat better and exercise, and try to get them to do it with you. And if you're struggling to do this on your own, I totally understand. It is not easy. Contact Sandra and get some real help. Her website is www.sandraalia.com. Thank you again to Sandra for joining us. Now, if you're enjoying this show, please make sure to subscribe. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and iHeartRadio. Links to each of those is on uberdadshow.com/subscribe. You can also sign up for our emails on that exact same page. Okay, last thing for this week. I've been working on an alternate version of my show theme. The original was done about 12 years ago, and I still love that version, but I thought I'd, you know, try some different guitars and some different textures and have some fun with the solo. And I'll tell you, my fingers are still recovering from that. Imagine the video for this would be, you know, a guy playing in a music store and doing this, and security coming and grabbing him and throwing him out, because that's pretty much what it sounds like to me. Hey, you know what that song needs? More wah-wah. I don't even know if that's possible. Oh, this show was written and produced by Rick Brown. Research and copywriting. Sing. Oh my God. Does anybody else get the impression this dude is hard to work with? Show theme by some overenthusiastic guitar freak. Copyright 2018 by Rick Brown. Visit uberdadshow.com to connect and to subscribe. Thank you for listening.